My name is Quinn Mitchell, and this is Into the Tussle. Today, I had the honor of interviewing William He. William is the founder of Dream for America, a Gen Z-led organization focused on taking on Republican groups such as Turning Point Action. Please note that this episode was recorded right before President Biden dropped out of the race. Enjoy. William, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Quinn.
Oh, it's brilliant. So, obviously I did my share of background research before this interview, but can you just share a bit about yourself to viewers who may not know you?
Sure. My name is William He. I'm just 17. I founded Dream for America just a year ago at 16. I am the son of Chinese immigrants, and I first really got involved in politics after the Parkland school shootings. I think that was an inflection point for a lot of young people, seeing people our age being slain by gun violence, and all the events that happened after that, right? That's sort of my inflection point of getting involved into politics. But once again, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have someone who just to be talking to someone who's just a year older than me. It's something I'm not used to. So I appreciate you coming on. Dream for America, right? That's your big organization that you run. I think it's a great organization. Can you just tell me a bit about it and, you know, why you started it?
Sure. So what Dream for America is so we are a Gen Z-led organization. We were actually founded on July 4th, Independence Day. Quick nod. And the whole premise of what we do is sort of building a nationwide organization that can take on far-right extremism, right? And to understand purely exactly what we do and why we do it, you have to understand what we're up against. And that would be Turning Point USA. To anyone who's not familiar with what Turning Point USA is, it is founded by Charlie Kirk. You may have heard of him. And what they do essentially is get young people to become Christian nationalists and far-right extremists, right? The stuff that they push on campuses and at their conferences and their events, it's quite appalling. In fact, Charlie Kirk just spoke at the Republican National Convention claiming that young people should vote for Donald Trump for the reason of young people were more better off than ever before under Trump than any other presidency, which I find ludicrous. But fundamentally, what Turning Point is they're an organization trying to get young people to become far-right extremists, part of the MAGA movement. And what they're doing is basically bringing the MAGA movement to our schools. And they do a whole host of things, everything from, chapters and conferences all the way to podcasts, and they even started up a private school and so much more. And fundamentally what they do is quite scary. They have a whole army of volunteers armed with hundreds of millions of dollars from billionaire donors like the Koch brothers, and they have thousands of chapters across the country in high schools and colleges and universities. And they pour millions of those dollars into racial and gender outreach, campus organizing, registering young voters, podcasts and production ecosystems in conjunction with organizations like PragerU. Like I mentioned, they have a whole private charter school set up dedicated to a curriculum about indoctrinating basically toddlers and, you know, elementary kids with Christian white nationalism. And they do all of these quarterly leadership conferences, drawing thousands of young Americans. In fact, at one of their conferences just a couple months ago, they were talking about the need. One of their speakers was talking about the need for all the young men and all the teenagers in the audience to marry up with a nice Christian girl, find yourself a nice Christian man, and have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 kids. Why? Because allegedly there is this great Muslim takeover that is going to take all of our jobs, all of our government positions, all of our, you know, businesses. So this is the kind of stuff that they're telling young people, which is just this hateful ideology of division and pushing homophobia and sexism and all of this, you know, vile ideology back into the mainstream. They're basically taking, you know, a whole lot of what Andrew Tate says, but they're red pilling everybody. So quite frankly, it's scary. And we're trying to provide an outlet and trying to fight back against that. There is no other youth organization that is focused on trying to take on this far-right behemoth. They are getting more and more powerful with every single year. And, we're not going to really try to reinvent the wheel here, right? Our goal is to, have chapters on campus, rally young people in the places they are digitally, right? So that's TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, wherever. We're even on Truth Social, actually, and hosting conferences. And the fundamental goal of what we do is more cultural rather than electoral, right? We're, of course, we want young people to vote and to turn out, and we'll do our part in trying to register young people. But the fundamental goal is more about trying to rally young people to fight fascism and win this culture war that the right insists on waging, and win it on behalf of democracy and progressive values. And really trying to encourage young people to defend democratic values, uphold liberal institutions, and support progressive policies that actually help people. Because nowadays you see so many young people who are disillusioned and apathetic and distrustful of government and the media and institutions, which there are a lot of valid reasons to do so. But that's thanks in part to organizations like Turning Point, which are telling people that government can't do anything for you. Government is terrible, that all your elected leaders are, lizard people who drink blood, and that they're out to get you, and that they don't care about you. And so, all of that is really harmful rhetoric, and really, pitting each other against, anybody who doesn't agree with you is an enemy. That's the kind of harmful rhetoric we have to push back against. And I have to think that, our generation, we have lived through, I mean, every day is basically like a new historical, major historical event, right? You have war, you have gun violence, you have historic amounts of student loan debt and surging healthcare costs. It just seems like all of it is so much. But I like to think that, instead of offering people a vision of, everything is terrible and, your neighbor is your enemy, I like to think that a vision of, there is hope. America is the greatest country in the world, right? And if you are a supporter of all the great things we have done, the moon landing, winning World War II, civil rights, and so much more, then welcome aboard. You're a liberal. And more importantly than that, our best days are still ahead of us. But at any rate, I'm a debate kid. Very long rant here about what we do. But in essence, we're trying to rally young people to become independent, civically engaged, liberal-minded future leaders of America.
You know how Charlie Kirk does those YouTube videos where he sets up, students to debate? I think you should show up at one of those and debate him. I was
Well,
thinking.
actually, one of the things that our team has pitched to me was that eventually, maybe for 2028, we could do like Dream for America versus Turning Point debate. It'll be me versus Charlie, and we can just go at it. That'll be really fun. In fact, I think Charlie actually we sent out a fundraising email or some sort of text a couple months ago, and Charlie read it out on his TV show or on his podcast, and was talking about how, we're this George Soros funded, socialist, communist group, and the left is coming for us and your children. And that's really funny because we're not even funded. I frankly would love to be funded by George Soros, actually. But it's a great idea. I'll take you up on that.
Oh, please. Did you get a? I was watching the RNC all weekend. I got to hear, Ramaswamy, obviously, Charlie Kirk. I mean, Ramaswamy has been a main proponent of a lot of the stuff about incentivizing Gen Z. Did you get a chance to hear him over at the RNC this weekend?
I did. I heard both Charlie and I heard Vivek as well. Yikes. If the RNC thinks that those are your best sort of your best surrogates to try to rally young people to your side, I think you can do better. But more importantly too, is part of Charlie's message and Vivek's message is that you can save America and you can fix all the issues that are happening in this country. And you do that by, get this, you show up on your campus and you declare yourself a conservative and you get married and you become a Christian and you have kids and you teach them to love God and you teach them to, salute the flag. That's how you save America. That's their vision for America. And then you couple that with chants of send them back and mass deportations now, that those signs that the people at the convention were holding, right? That's their vision for America. And frankly, it doesn't really feel like a political rally anymore. It feels a lot more like something far more sinister. It feels a lot more like an effort to really, suppress dissent and move us in a direction that is really terrifying.
Yeah, you know, obviously,
My,
yeah. Oh,
oh, go
sorry.
ahead.
Good. But like, obviously, you know, I we've heard some of your rhetoric. Very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. I guess my next question is, like, what efforts do you make to engage with Gen Z through Dream for America? Because, not for, I think you and I both know that most of Gen Z is not as politically in tune as we are. Not a lot of Gen Z watch the RNC. Not a lot of Gen Z have listened to Ramaswamy or probably Charlie Kirk for that matter. So, like, what efforts do you make to engage with this generation?
Well, frankly, I think it comes down to trying to meet young people where they are, right? And that whether it, that is us going on campus and having chapters, right? And we have innovative youth-tailored marketing, setting up tables, distributing literature, right? Just having conversations with people on campus, right? Because our goal is to move the needle, right? Get young people to become liberals and get young people to understand how government works and to be, make them understand the importance of our institutions and that politics should be one of hope and right, and that our best days are ahead of us and not behind. So whether that is getting on campus and having conversations with people or, having a whole community of creators pushing out content for us online, right, using memes or relevant pop culture, it's all about meeting young people where they are and combining culture and politics and the Gen Z touch, right? It's also good to have content and messaging coming from people who are actually young people, and really trying to meet people where they are, having conversations, right? Whether that's at, the coffee shop or on campus or online. It's all about meeting young people where they are and have and presenting them a point of view. Because it always starts off with, you can present somebody a point of view and you can share your story, and then that'll open up, a tunnel in their mind to explore further.
Yeah,
And you
I
do
agree.
that not by you do that not by throwing a bunch of, complicated policy jargon or a bunch of academic language or a bunch of statistics and numbers at people, right? Because frankly, if we just talk about the sheer facts and numbers, frankly, liberal policies are the better policies for the country. Reality often has a liberal bias, right? I love that Ben Shapiro talks about how facts don't care about your feelings, but why is it that it's always been Democrats and liberals who have always grown the economy? Why is it Republicans who have always crashed the economy? All right, that so, but it's all about trying to reach people in a more subtle way. So that means, trying to offer memes and pop culture, trying to shy away from complicated academic language. And boiling down key issues and key events and, recent events and current events into key issues into simple, repeatable, and relatable ways. On top of that, we have to push back on every single lie that the far right is saying. And we also have to reclaim a lot of the values that conservatives have seemed to have gotten a monopoly on. And this is the key to reaching a lot of young men, which is that a lot of young men nowadays, young men are actually 12th grade boys are now more conservative than they have ever been before in the last 50 years. This is something that Turning Point is actively touting. And most of that change has happened in the last 5, 10 years. And so what Democrats and progressives and liberals also have to do is reclaim American history and embrace values like freedom and patriotism and reclaim, the mantle of religion, right? Why are we letting conservatives sort of act as the more morally courageous ones, as the more holy ones, as the people who love America? Patriotism is not fundamentally a conservative value. It's an American value. And frankly, anyone who wants to call themselves a patriot, what that means to us and what that means to Dream for America, what that should mean to the rest of the country, is if you love your country, you love your country so much that you acknowledge its faults and you want to see it become even better than it has ever been before. So fundamentally, the way we reach young people is, flipping the table on what progressive messaging looks like and trying to reach young people in the places they are with content and organizing that appeals to them, whether that is the way we say things or the way that we present things or just simply it being straight up memes. That's how we reach young people. And on top of that, we have to make sure that we're talking to people, right? We're having conversations. We can't be shutting people out. We can't, as much as we want to criticize political leaders and people in politics for their ideas and for all the heinous things that they're proposing and doing, right? We can't denigrate their supporters, right? Because we can always try to push them in a different direction. But fundamentally, that's our strategy and that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, like you and I both know that, reaching Gen Z online, like it's impossible to do that with pure policy. So we have to reach them with stuff like that. And I feel like one of my worries about doing that is that you almost like dumb down politics to like Biden falling down the stairs or, Trump doing something stupid that's completely unrelated to their plans for the country. So I would just be kind of curious to hear your take on that. I just wish there was a way, for, actual policy to be released on like social media and whatnot.
And so I have two responses to that. Firstly, right, I mean, I would love for elections to all purely be about policy. I mean, wouldn't our country be so much better if we talked about genuine, ideas about how we can improve the lives of people who live in our neighborhoods and our communities? Wouldn't that be great? But I think a big part of that is there's a lot of people, and conservatives do this a lot more than liberals do, but trying to really play up culture wars and try to divide people with all sorts of different, kinds of nonsense, right, and distracting people from actual issues and talking about actual things that are happening in our communities. And you see this with, for example, the Republican National Convention. They didn't have a platform in 2020. They chose not to have a platform. It was just, let's succumb to the whims of whatever Trump says. And as a product of that, you see a lot of young people on TikTok, right? A lot of the content on about Trump has become sort of like an aura off for between Trump and Biden, right? Who has the most riz and
Oh, like the
who looks
TikTok
most
edits.
tough, right?
Yeah, they have. Yeah.
And so, frankly, that's terrible that our politics has ascended to that kind of that's the way that people decide who they support or who they like. But at the same time, we can't cross our arms and concede that, right? So if that's what's happening, okay, well, we have to meet where the battle line is, and we have to do the exact same thing, which is why we put out Joe Biden edits.
From here, we had a conversation about Gen Z and the choices they have. If they can, actively engage with these candidates and candidates they found incredibly unrelatable on a large scale to degrees that it was very hard to engage with Gen Z. But now we're seeing that they can engage with Kamala Harris, whether that's, just her talking about how much she loves Venn diagrams, which is a hilarious clip, which I suggest you all go and find, or if it's her, talking about, I just fell out of a coconut tree, or if it's some like, brat meme, they can actually engage and be excited about a candidate, which is it's a new phenomenon for Gen Z. I think that we've never experienced something like this. If younger generations had the pleasure of the Obama campaign, we never had something like this. So it is very interesting to hear what William had to say a week ago about Gen Z in November. And I don't really think he could confidently say then that Gen Z was so enthusiastic about showing up for Biden, but just based, or, the Democrat nominee, but based on what I'm seeing today, I would say that he would say with full confidence that Gen Z is actually enthusiastic about a candidate for the first time in their lives. Do you think Gen Z is disappointed in their choices in November?
I wouldn't necessarily say disappointed, but I would say, and I think this doesn't apply, this applies to beyond Gen Z too. I think it applies to Americans as a whole. I think there's a lot of people in this country who are disillusioned, who are confused, who are frustrated, who are angry. Not just about the two choices that we have, because they are two, old dudes who are running again, because they just ran again 4 years ago, so they're now running again. But more about the way the direction that this country is going. And so I think what people really thirst for is, I mean, beyond the age thing, because I don't think age is really that much of a difference, because you see, Trump is what, like 2 years younger than Biden? So fundamentally, this isn't about age. I think fundamentally, I think people are more so disappointed that that things just aren't working as well for them as they used to, whether that is reality or whether that's just their perception. So I think Gen Z is on some level, sort of disillusioned and, disappointed in just sort of the state of politics as a whole. I think people are just tired of not having choices that they can fully believe in, and tired of living in a country and a society where the politics nowadays is frankly just people having an aura off of, who looks the best in photos or who can, sound the most cool. And frankly, just all the division of, if you disagree with me, you're the enemy. If, and just this perception that government isn't working as well for them. And so I think, to answer your question, I think on some level, yes, Gen Z is sort of, not happy with the choices, but I think that speaks to more about the state of politics as a whole in our country, being angry and frustrated and disillusioned rather than any particular issue with these two particular candidates. Because I think even if you swapped out Biden with anybody else, or if you swapped out Trump with anybody else and you had those two people go together, I would think that, you'd still have a lot of people who would not like either of their choices. Which is why it's really important for organizations like Dream for America to get out there and try to, turn the tables and turn the tide and really show people the light of that, yes, things are bad now, but things could be better in the future. And they can be. They were good before, they can be good again. And in fact, if we try hard enough, they can be better than it has ever been before. But to accomplish that and to reach that level in our country, you can't check out of the process. You can't cross your arms. You can't, have a tantrum and act like a toddler and say, oh, I didn't get what I want, so I'm just gonna, not participate. And I'm just gonna, even if it gets worse, I don't care because I'm not happy with my choices. And I understand where that anger comes from. And sometimes I feel it too. And I know a lot of people who feel that way, right? But the solution is not to cross your arms and not to check out of the process, but it's to get more involved and to speak up and to get out and to stand up and to have conversations and to vote and to do so much more than that. Because the world that you're envisioning, the world that you want to have, will never come if you never try to fight for it. And so I'm really disheartened when people say that, I'm just not going to vote in this election, or I just don't care about politics, or it's just too messy and too divisive. I understand, but that's also a very immature understanding of the world, because frankly, it's a really privileged perspective to say that, oh, you know what? I'm just going to check out of the process. Politics, it's just not my thing. I don't really care. Right? Because while it might not affect you, it definitely is affecting somebody else. It's affecting some immigrant who's going to get deported because they're Mexican. It's going to affect some gay kid who's going to get bullied and taunted and hurt by policies in his community because the people in his town don't like gay people, or the women in your life, right? Maybe a classmate or a teacher or a family member or a sister, whoever it is, they're raped or they're a victim of incest or some other circumstance, and they can't get an abortion and they're forced to carry their child to term and they might even die, right? So these are the consequences of policies. Politics is very much real life. It has a really big difference, and it can make a really big difference in people's lives. But right now, the bad people are making those differences. And the good people aren't there are because the good people oftentimes check out of the process. So to answer your question, I think it is I think a lot of people are, you know, they would prefer, I'm sure, better choices, but it is a more fundamental issue with, you know, the dichotomy of how our politics currently works. And I think there is a capacity for our generation and for generations beyond to be inspired by politics once again. And to do that, we have to reignite a sense of optimism and hope in people. And that is making them see that, you know, America has moments where we are a really, really great country, where we can do really great things for a lot of people, and where we can be a beacon of hope for so many people across the country and at home and abroad. And that this country can be a place where everybody can have the chance to be themselves and live authentically. But to do that, we have to get engaged. We have to get involved, and we have to, you know, not just stand against everything that is bad that the far right is pushing, but also offer a vision that is appealing and unifying for everybody in this country.
That's a very informing answer. I appreciate that. Obviously, a lot of talk right now is about Biden stepping aside, Pelosi, Schiff, Jeffries, and more other people. I'm just wondering, I think when a lot of my peers see Biden, they see an 82-year-old guy who, and this is not, I'm not speaking for me, I'm speaking from my peers, 82-year-old guy who can't finish a sentence. Some people think his cognitive decline is so bad that he's completely unfit for a second term. And that's a lot of the peers I'm talking to who see it disheartening. And I feel like my question for you is, do you think, and I think you've already responded to a lot of what I just said, but do you think someone younger, someone more around like JD, I mean, obviously Trump just picked JD Vance, which is a play probably for the next generation Republican leadership. Do you think it would be better to have a more energizing candidate on the ticket who could reach out to Gen Z and who could articulate their intentions more and get it across in a way that doesn't make that makes Gen Z not want to stop listening to them?
I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of choices. The Democratic Party has a deep bench of people to look from. But my personal perspective as a Gen Zer, and why I so vigorously make the case for the president is, you know, yes, Biden struggled in a debate. Does it matter? Of course, everyone is watching. Is it the only thing that matters? Absolutely not. And I would encourage people to do their own research, to think for themselves, right? Because the real bias in media and in politics is not that it's partisan, it's that it's negative. It's this 24-hour cycle that constantly barrages you with hate and negativity to gain clicks and ad dollars. And so I think fundamentally, if you, and this is why I think policy is more important than, you know, any personal characteristics. If you look into the record of both candidates for Biden and for Trump, overwhelmingly, if every single young person in this country understood what both candidates stood for, I guarantee you, I can take it to the bank, and I would bet on it that almost every single young person in this country would choose Biden over Trump. And if I were Biden, I'd answer the question about age with, you know, I don't have time to dye my hair. I don't have time to get a spray tan. I don't have time to sit in a makeup chair for 20 minutes every day because I'm busy getting stuff done. And that makes me look old. I don't really care. And look, the question is legitimate, the age question, but I think the conclusion that people draw is really off base. Not only can age be a really great net asset in terms of experience and being able to get things done, but I think age doesn't matter so much as the age of somebody's ideas. And, you know, the president has done really, frankly, like just purely on record, has done more than any other administration has in this century or in modern American history, probably since LBJ. Or FDR, right? And I don't know about anybody else, but I am really happy that we're fixing our bridges, that we're fixing our roads and our airports and the rest of our infrastructure. We're giving people clean water, air, connecting rural America to broadband, that we're competing with China and the rest of the world on manufacturing. We're building an economy that has a smart and sustainable transition to clean energy. We're protecting women's rights and gay rights and civil rights. We're tackling gun safety. We're making sure that people who are unable to pay down their student loan debt have a chance to succeed in this economy. And I could go on and on and on. And so when people say that he's old, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he is old, but look at what he's gotten done. And if that's not enough for you, look at the other guy. Compare him to the alternative, not the Almighty. And look, I deeply condemn political violence, and I hope President Trump makes a full recovery, and it looks like he is, and I'm grateful that he's unharmed. But we also can't forget that this is the same man who instigated so much of the division and hate and political violence in this country for the last 10 years. January 6th was not an anomaly. It's a pattern. You have Charlottesville, where you have neo-Nazis clashing with people. You have people out in the streets who are hate-criming people. You have, all of this hatred. And so, to answer your question, I think I'm sure there's many other younger candidates who could do as just as good of a job. But fundamentally, not only did 14 million people vote for President Biden this time around to become the Democratic nominee in the primaries, it would be such a chaotic mess and a divisive thing for the party and for the country to try to choose somebody new 3 months right before the election. And we're only like a month or two before early voting starts. And so, there's a lot of reason not to do it. And there's a lot of reasons in support of why the president should stay on. And there's a lot of substantive reasons to do it. So I would think I'm sure there are more younger candidates who could relate more to Gen Z, but in terms of who has done the most for our generation, that would still be the president. And that's why myself and why Dream for America and a whole coalition of dozens of other youth organizations joined together to endorse the president back in the spring.
Thanks for the answer. I think my final question to you is going to be like, obviously, when I'm talking to my peers, and like you mentioned earlier, a lot of Gen Zers, find it difficult to get up. Politics, the state of politics right now is so polarizing. It's so dividing. It's for a lot of Gen Zers, it's really tough to listen to, and it's really tough to get involved. And a lot of them wonder, what's the point? I mean, we're already. I mean, there's nothing else we can do because, our future is already doomed. So, I mean, I think my final question for you is, how do you see this generation's future? Do you find it optimistic, or do you find it already settled?
I think the current state of affairs is grim. There is a lot to be upset about and a lot to be angry at, and rightfully so. But if we put in the work and we think about what can come and what could come, then our future could be bright. But democracy and our country and our future, none of it is a given. And so we have to stand up and defend it. I understand that. With all the war and all the school shootings and the economic instability, we survived a global pandemic too, and now we're going through political violence. Our generation has never seen an America united or at peace. And so I absolutely think we deserve to have a future worth inheriting. And I think the other generations ought to step up and work with us on leaving us something that we can be proud of. I think I completely understand that it is really hard to stay engaged and it's really hard to be optimistic about the future right now. But the only way we can, and I'm going to borrow a lot of the grievance language that the right uses, the only way we can save America, the only way we can make America great again is by building a country where everyone has the freedom to live authentically. It does not mean kicking out immigrants. It does not mean dividing people. It does not mean scapegoating people. It does not mean piling all the wealth and resources in this country to the wealthiest 10 people in this country. It does not mean letting people pollute our environment and our cities and target our communities and our families carte blanche. We can make this country better by encouraging people and electing people and getting involved to organize for civil rights, for voting rights, for gay rights, for bodily autonomy, by stopping gun violence, ending climate change, providing economic opportunity. Having an America that we can be proud of is all about giving every single person in this country the chance to fulfill your version of the American dream. And so, it's a really dark time to be in politics, and it's really not a great time to be an American citizen, with all that's going on. But we have to realize that yes, things are bad now, but the and I want to borrow a quote from The Lorax. The only way things get better, unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to ever get better. And so, my advice to everybody who is feeling down and who is feeling disappointed and disillusioned and out of it, get involved, start caring, and realize that while things are bad now, they don't have to be. And they won't be if you get involved. Now, obviously, that's all easier said than done, but the first step in solving any problem is acknowledging that it exists and taking the leap of faith to get to work. So, and for anyone who's interested in getting involved in any way, you can visit dreamforamerica.org. You can volunteer, you can start a chapter, you can join our national team. You can get a grant from us to organize for liberal values on your campus and organize for anything ranging from, passing out banned books on campus or providing contraception to your friends, to voter registration tables. You name it, we can give you the grant money to get you started. And let's go out there, fight fascism, defend democracy, and realize that this country, hope is not lost. Our best days are still ahead. Thanks for having me, Gwen.
Thanks for coming on.
As William mentioned, you can search up dreamforamerica.org to learn more about his organization. I also will link that directly in the bio of this podcast, as well as more information about William, since I think he is a great proponent of the Democrat Party platform, and I think it's great to hear from him. So again, if you want to learn more about him, you can go there. So thank you so much for coming on, William, and thank you all for listening. Have a great day, y'all. Bye-bye.